This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
Treatment is not a treatment unless it's given. This is something people do not understand, because unfortunately, many people, even in our own field, think of our work superstitiously. They think we have some knowledge about God that other people either do not possess or cannot possess. That, of course, is ridiculous. I was talking the other day with somebody, and he said, "I just don't believe in God." I said, "You believe in God, all right. You just don't believe in the God that's believed in, which shows you're very intelligent." Now, a treatment is something that takes place in our own consciousness. It's an activity within our own mind of acceptance of some definite thing for someone, for some situation, occasion, or for ourselves. For instance, right now I am working for a certain artist who is outside this country, in the production that's being made, a picture. Now, I work for him in my own mind. I don't send out thoughts to him and say, "Now, you're going to do this or that." I do not talk to him mentally. I talk about him to myself. And you may be certain, the work is effective. Why is that? Because there's the medium of only one mind, and what I recognize about him in my own mind becomes a recognition about himself in his own mind, because there are not two minds at all. There's only one, and we are both using it. Now, this is one of the keys to successful treatment. You don't send out thoughts. Another one is you don't hold thoughts. If you were planting a garden, you would not hold the seeds in your hand. You have to plant them. You have to let go of them. So we can do away with sending out thoughts, and we can do away with the idea of holding thoughts, and you don't influence anyone. What do you influence when you jump off the roof? You don't influence gravitational force. You merely jump into it and down you plop. That's the way it works. And you don't concentrate anything. What do you concentrate when you plant a rose bush? Nothing. Not a thing. All you do is to connect the idea of rose with a medium that produces all plants. And because you have connected the idea rose with a universal medium, that medium responds to this particular idea in such a way as to create a rose and nothing else. Now, that's the kind of intelligence we're dealing with. Consequently, in spiritual mind treatment that is effective, you identify your treatment with the person, the place, or the thing you wish to work for, and everything else is done in your own consciousness. Let us remember this right now as we turn within to know that there is one presence and one power, and we are using it. It is our desire now to realize that every person in this room is an embodiment of this divine presence and this perfect power, that every organ and action and function of this physical body is an attribute of pure spirit. There is divine circulation, perfect elimination and assimilation. There is one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is our life now. It is right here now. It is here this moment now. Now we are identifying every person here with this divine life. Every person is saying, I am one with God who is perfect. I am one with a power that is right here, an intelligence, a creative presence. I am one with the divine pattern of my own body, which is perfect. My whole consciousness accepts this, believes it, permits it. And as a result of this, anything that does not belong to that divine body, that spiritual body, that perfect body, is eliminated now. There is one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is my life right now, this moment, here and now. Now we must believe that our word, right now, is the law of elimination to everything that denies this. Don't ask how it can be. No one living knows how anything can be. Life is accepted. It cannot be explained. Only the way it works. Just know that if anything needs elimination, it is eliminated through our realization of the divine presence. Automatically operating in perfect, divine manner. There is one life. That life is God. That life is my life now, and that life is perfect now. Now it is so simple. Let us believe that anything that denies that is itself reversed. Let us believe that our word operates until it fulfills itself, completes itself. Now let us know that we are divinely guided. Something in us knows what to do under every circumstance and situation whatsoever. Now let us go further than this and accept that since we are identified with a living spirit, nothing but good goes from us and nothing but good can come back. Our subject this morning is religious science in our everyday lives. Trying to bring it right down to earth and make it practical. Had an experience this morning that interested me very much. Three people who evidently come out here for a few months in the winter were there, and one said, I am, his name is Victor. I think I met him here a couple years ago, and another one said her name was Alice. Alice was a young lady back in Maine. Of course, you don't know Alice, so I'll have to tell you, it's more than 50 years ago. She looks about 45 now. But she said you wouldn't remember me, and I said, yes, your mother used to make such wonderful cake. And we kids, she'd always give us some. She said one time when a lot of you were sick, we had four of you in our home for a week or two. You see, we had so many that was all right. You wouldn't miss four. And I remembered so many things. I could see the house. I remembered her going to Portland. I remembered other things, an illness she had. I remembered the neighbors. Things that have not been in my mind consciously for 50 years. Now, I'm not doing that to tell you how old I am, because I don't care how old. I'm as old as God. So is everyone else. But we are as young as God, since God is the eternally unborn, forever expressing itself. Meister Eckhart, you know, you have never read the work of Meister Eckhart. It's among the most beautiful things in the world. He's a Catholic priest about the 12th or 13th century. And he was a heretic, although he didn't get kicked out. I think he might have been excommunicated after, posthumously. I don't know. It takes a long time for us to find out what people are really talking about, you know. And he was a great mystic. That is, he was one of the spiritual geniuses of the ages. He said God never had but one son. The eternal is forever begetting his only begotten, and he is begetting him in me now. That would be heresy today in most Christian churches. So you know what it must have sounded like hundreds of years ago, 700 years ago, or whenever. What he was really saying was this: God, all creation is the Son of God. You are the Son of God. I am the Son of God. If you were to look at the correct interpretation of the only begotten Son of God, it's absolutely wrong. It should be read, the Son begotten of the only God. Now there's quite a difference. Whether you pick out one person and say he's the only one, or pick out all people and say there's only one Father. As a Jew said, God is one. Now, we are all that Son, every one of us. God is eternally giving birth to himself in us. This is the offering eternally made. This is the gift forever given and forever being given. Therefore, it is a new creation every moment of every day and night forever. An absolutely new creation. Consequently, Eckhart said, God had only one son. I am that son. Everyone is that son. God is forever begetting that son. He is forever incarnating, forever flowing through, forever activating, animating, directing, forever new. Now, if we could get this concept, I suppose age like a mask would drop from our faces. If we could get this concept, fear would leave us. If we could get this concept, all of the liabilities of yesterday piled up against us in our memory would be dissolved. If we could get this concept, all of the horrible morbidity of spiritual philosophy that generates fear would dissipate itself, and we would realize what I think someday we will have to realize if we're going to get a real sense of freedom, and that is this: I have a secret with God. There is a secret place of the Most High. They that dwell in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my strength and my fortress, my God. In Him will I trust. But we all have these memories. I was thinking as I came back on the platform, I remember this victor's father and mother. His father was a physician. Everybody thought he was a little bit screwy because he didn't belong to 50 years ago. He belonged to today. He had anticipated psychosomatic medicine, psychiatry, psychology before it was hardly known. I remember it very well. And I thought then, these memories I now have are happy ones, fortunately. I remember when this kid got a new bicycle, a chainless bicycle. He couldn't have been over 12. And all the rest of us were rather jealous of it. We thought it was terrific. Now these are stored up in memory, the book of memory. What else is there in there that perhaps is not as happy, that unconsciously I try to crowd down lest it offend my hope, because the ego must not be rejected? And yet, the only medium in you and in me, between the absolute and the relative, between God and man, between heaven and earth and hell, fear and faith, joy and sorrow, is our own thinking. Did you ever stop to think that should you take away the thing that thinks, there wouldn't be anything left to know whether there is anything, any place, any time, or anywhere? Now these are the things that should knock us out, in a sense. If there was nothing in me that could know there's something in me, then there wouldn't be anything here that knows anything. I would not only not be at home, there wouldn't be any home which I had left. There would be nothing. Now these are such important things. Therefore, whatever this thing is that I am, I'm not trying to tell you what it is because I don't know. But whatever it is not only the most important thing on earth to me. Whatever this thing is I am, is the only thing that I am. And there isn't anything else other than what has a relationship to this thing. Now, I don't mean that I placed the mountains up there. I certainly didn't put the ocean out here or the fish in it. I've caught a lot out of it, but never as many as people think they catch, because that can't be done. But the ocean exists to me, and the mountains, and you, and everything else, because we are all living in one mind, one spirit, in which all these things exist. And it is that mind and that spirit that is my existence. First thing we have to learn in our science is there is one mind, as Emerson said, common to all men. We are right now using the mind of God. Our thought is creative because a coconut is creative. For the same reason that a hen will lay an egg and an artist will paint a picture, we belong to nature. God is what we are. There is no you separate from God. Now, this is one of the first things we have to realize, because we have to have this secret with God, each one of us, that since God never made any two persons alike, evidenced by the fact that no two thumbprints are identical, then there is something about each one of us that is unique. This is not conceit. I know very well there's something about me that's different. Now, I'm not worried that it's different. It has to be different. There is something about myself which, if I rightly cultivated it, could and probably would become some kind of a genius. Not that I would have anything to do with it. If I have anything to do with it, it's only by way of blocking it. They could not enter in because of their unbelief, and because they limited the Holy One of Israel. The very first thing that you and I ought to do is to acknowledge not only that God is all there is, but God is all that we are. I'm not all of God. I didn't put the ocean out there. I didn't put the mountains. But that thing in me that sees the ocean and the mountains is God, inseparable from me. Take away my identity in God and I'll have no existence. Well, of course, I don't figure it can be taken away. I think Browning said it's a spark which a man may desecrate but never lose. Now you might say, what has all this got to do with religious science in everyday life? How is this going to make my life better? Well, this is the cause of your life. It is the acknowledgement of the source which taps the source. It is the realization and faith and conviction which, as it were, puts a pipe directly from the infinite reservoir of being through our own mind and action that animates our action and acquaints our mind. I believe, for instance, there's only one body in the universe. It's the body of God. Was it not Pope who said, all are parts of one stupendous whole whose body nature is with God, the soul. Now, this is a very beautiful thing, but it's very meaningful. There is one body, that is the body of God. There is a divine pattern of my own physical body. I wouldn't have one if there weren't. Therefore, if I want to be practical, if I want to bring our philosophy and our thought and what it does down into everyday life, I must consciously and subconsciously identify myself with the living spirit. I am that which thou art. That is, I am of the same nature as God. Thou art that which I am. That means God is my life. It's an old Hindu saying in the Hindu scriptures. I am that which thou art. Thou art that which I am. Same thing as Jesus saying, the Father and I are one. Now somebody might say, but I don't want to do that because that's religious, then don't do it. That's the answer to that one. You can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. No man can get away from the fact that he's alive. It's impossible. No man can get away from the fact that the thing we call life or God is life. Therefore, no man can get away from God. There's nowhere to run to. God is everywhere. No man can get away from the obligation and the responsibility and the opportunity to live, because he lives somewhere, I believe, and I believe we know he's living right here, and I think we have enough proof he goes on. Therefore, acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace. The starting point is the acknowledgement of some kind of a God. The only kind of a God that people rebel against is the theological God who sends some to heaven and some to hell and all for his glory. That is nonsense. The old Presbyterians actually believed, of course they don't now, that hell was paved with infant skulls. Isn't that a sweet thought? They burned the Maid of Orleans at the stake because she was what today we will call clairvoyant. In other words, the things that she did are today scientifically determined at a psychological laboratory at Duke's University, where they are proving that we may reproduce the activities of the organs of the sense without using the organs. Please don't say can't be, because they're doing it. I've been doing it for 20 years. You can no more dispute those records than you can say this isn't a theater. So don't waste your time trying to, anybody. You won't, I know, but I mean, don't be concerned with anybody. Somebody said to me the other day, well, my professor said, "'Tain't so." I said, "Is that so?" I said, "Let me tell you something, buddy. I know of a guy who never drove anything but mules in his life. And for the first time, he went and saw a circus, and he saw this giraffe, and he said, well, by God, there ain't no such an animal." Now, the giraffe's neck did not suddenly shrivel up. This guy's head didn't, because it couldn't shrivel. It was shriveled. And that's the story of shriveling. Now, of course, I don't want to be facetious, and I guess I said a bad word. But I could have thought of a worse. Now, this is it. There is no use any longer in our denying the inevitable. They burned this girl because they didn't understand what today we call extrasensory perception and thought that she was in league with the devil. Now, these were good people who burned her. They were rather sadistic. Now, I'll tell you why they burned her now. They had such a sense of guilt that they only got a relief by practicing sadism, and that is by precipitating their own unconscious sense of guilt in somebody else. That's where the devil came from in hell. The whole world did it, and what it did, it was enough, wasn't it? Now we have to get over all that. God is the simple fact in our lives. Simple, direct, dynamic, immediate, responsive. And I think we have to add another thing. I thought about it so much the last few years, so very much. And that's this. I am an individual and you are an individual. We all belong to the human race. But there's something a little different about each one of us. Therefore, even the infinite God won't be different because we're different, but will do a unique thing through us. I'm a great believer in the personalness of God. You know, because we say it's infinite, we don't take away the warmth and the color. To me, our philosophy has the most exalted concept of God as personal to me of any spiritual literature on earth, or that ever has been. I not only believe in that, but I believe in a unique way. This is the secret that you and I have with the eternal. He presents himself to me through me in a way that will never be reproduced. Never. Now, isn't that terrific? And I didn't make it. But I should acknowledge it, and I should identify my intellect and my emotions with this intense gratification. Now, it helps to build up the ego, but it is egoism and not egotism. Egoism means individualization. Egotism means I am conceited. They are not the same thing. God, our life has made me different from everything else. I have a right to know this and to know then that something unique, something different, something dynamic, something original shall pour through me. I do not have to sit at the doorway of tradition and overvenerate antiquity or anything else. God is singing a new song in me right now, and I should appreciate it. We should all feel that way. Therefore, this secret we have with the infinite, this intimate relationship that we have with an ineffable beauty is also a relationship with a dynamic power, a creative intelligence, a deathless being, and something that in my estimation is eternally in a state of intense activity. But I am speaking of intense without being tense. I read recently, and you have somewhere, I don't know where now, but I read it twice, two different magazines, some doctor in Canada, I guess, who is saying that most of our physical diseases originate in tension. We get so tense. Well, I imagine that's true. He says most psychosomatic conditions originate in some form of nerve tension, but back of the nerve tension, there's another one. He tells what we should do to relax. Now, tension is one thing, and intensity is another. For instance, you take an acetylene gas torch, it'll burn a steel slab just by being there. There is a concentration of its energy, which is dynamic, but it isn't tense. So there is about every one of us a power of intensity that can be loosed without tension. I never thought of it that way. That's good. That was worth my coming here. I'll put at least a dollar in the collection. Somebody deposit up here. It's worth that much to me. Because I'll tell you why. You plant an acorn. Isn't there an intensity there? Isn't there a concentrated creativity and will and imagination that will expand and burst the seed, crowd aside the soil, send down its roots and send up its shoots, and create an oak, shelter the birds, and give shade to the animals, and reproduce and remultiply itself perennially, ad infinitum? Think of that. That is what I mean when I say the intensity of action at the center of everything. Think of the dynamic power in the atom. Excuse me. I couldn't help it. Now, suppose there is such a dynamic something in us. How do we know? Emerson said, there is a place in every man's life whereby he may let out the reins to the full. Now, how would we arrive at this intensity without tension through intention? First of all, we'd have to make up our mind it's there. We are individuals. We have volition. If I run around saying nothing good can happen to me, nobody likes me, nobody invites me anywhere, I don't get anything out of life, I wish I were dead, then we're not very happy. Now, we're liable to do that without knowing that we're doing it because we have piled up so much frustration. What Fritz Kunkel calls, and I think in a very, it's very good, the unlived life. Which means that the creative energy that ought to go out into explosion, into satisfaction, gratification, is crowded back, but remains, as Freud said, in a dynamic state. In other words, it is something buried alive within us. Well, we want to arrive at the thought, God is all there is, God is what I am, God is not just locked up in me, God is expressed through me. Now, I've noticed over and over for many years in treating someone who is an inventor or working on a plot for a play or writing a story or doing any creative thing, I always work that way. And I say the original creative power, God, is flowing through this person's imagination and will into action. This divine and original creative power is not reproducing something that's been done. It is right now in this person a fresh, a new beginning and a new creation, this moment. Now let's follow the action of this. This is a treatment, you see. We want to bring this thing right down and say this is how we use it. Now this is what I think happens. I don't send out a thought. As I said, I prayed to somebody this morning who's starting a picture in a foreign country. I said, everything that the character this person is called on to do ought to know, everything it ought to be and everything it ought to do and the way it ought to do it and say it, is now operating through this person's consciousness, will, and imagination perfectly and dynamically and originally and spontaneously, and I know it. Then I sit there feeling it and say it in a different way. Now what happens? I'm not sending out a thought to him. I don't know just where they are on location. I know the country there, and they might be 1,000 miles away from where I'm thinking. It isn't like you send out something to hit their liver, you know, you might miss it. They might have moved to one side. There's only one mind. When I say this word is for John Smith, which isn't his name, I am identifying what I'm saying with this particular person and with no one else. This treatment belongs to him. But because there is the one mind, I can only know it here. This is where I am, that one mind, and where that one mind is operating through me. But because I say this is for this person, the operation will take place for the purpose, for the person I identify my treatment with. Oh, that's all balled up. I should say this for him, it is. That's simpler, isn't it? All right. Now then, there's another thing I believe. You know, some treatments are better than other treatments. Sometimes you sing a song better than other times. Sometimes people dance better. Sometimes people have better ideas in their business than at other times. Therefore, I feel sure, that since you never give a treatment twice alike because you couldn't and shouldn't try to. That would be a formula and it wouldn't work, you know. That each time must be considered a new time. Now, you follow this. If you're working for yourself or somebody else, forget you treated them yesterday or this morning. Don't treat them continuously, because that would be saying, I don't believe in my word. Forget it in between, but each time, try to make it new and fresh. Like you're painting a picture and you look at it and say, well, guess I'll mark this out and put in something else. Treatment's a very creative art. It's an art because it's a feeling. It's a science because it follows a law. And that law will react to the feeling at that particular time. That's why some treatments some days are better than others. Not because God changes, not because the law changes, but we're continuously changing. Therefore, I say to myself, I believe in what I am doing. I must feel what I am doing. And sometimes if that isn't complete, I say to myself, there is nothing in me that can hinder it. Now I'll tell you something else I have found. Because now we found out these last four times how to do this thing. I want to spend all the rest of the year in seeing if we don't do it. In the first place, very few people realize that a treatment is not a treatment unless it's given. Any more than the ground is planted with seed until it's planted. Very few other people realize, even in our own field, there is so much superstition in everything that has nothing to do with religion or spiritual things. We do not suddenly jump off into chaos, you know. Law of action and reaction obtains everywhere throughout the universe, visible and invisible. The treatment is conscious. It's definite. You put it into words, and sometimes you will discover that if you get, of course you're alone generally when you give a treatment, if you say it aloud, it will seem to have more effect. Now it had not to. And I've thought a great deal about that, because I know that sometimes it does. And if it does, that follows a law too. Therefore, I conclude, you think it out and see what you think. So I don't know any more about it than you do. I believe the reason is that it is more articulate in my own mind sometimes when I do it that way. But if there is any doubt of the clarity of the thought when I'm working, I almost invariably begin to give what we call an oral treatment. That is, I merely say the words aloud. And I think probably the reaction is that it's more definite in my own mind, because very frequently I find that when I haven't been doing that and start doing it, I get a better result. You'll have to watch all these methods, but the principle back of it is you are convincing yourself, because you are one with the only self there is. So I say, this man, this young man, whom I'm working for, they have chosen a certain character for him to do. Now let me tell you something else, I think. Does this do any good to you? Is it any good? I don't want to waste your time. I believe in the use of this thing. It's no good unless we use it. Nothing will come out of a treatment, in my estimation, unless you put it in. Nothing comes out of the ground unless you put it in. Jesus illustrated this when he said, you ask an egg and he won't give you a stone, or something and he won't give you a serpent. Everything in the universe very definite. Therefore, I believe that when somebody says, I'm going to take a path. I just read one of the funniest books I ever read. called No Time for Sergeants. It's awful funny. Read it. I don't know why I think about it now. Isn't this silly? But you will find this. Nothing comes out unless you put it in. The thing that you put in can't help coming out. Different ideas produce different results. This fella is called upon. Oh, I know why I mentioned that, because it's an eccentric character, very original book. So, the author of this book made a demand, now maybe he didn't know he did it, upon the creative intelligence within him in the universe and said, what will this kind of a young man, how will he talk, how will he say it, what will he do under every circumstance? And it's most remarkable. Now let us say this fellow I'm working for, they have chosen a certain leading role for him. I don't even know what it is. I don't care what it is. We'll say he's going to play the part of a coal miner or an engineer. Doesn't matter. Now, when we say to the creative intelligence within us, everything that he ought to know about this characterization, he automatically knows, because there's only one mind doing it all. This is the mind doing this. His whole feeling, emotion, and intellect will respond in this character in exactly the way such a character would respond. And if there had never been such a character, it would now be created out of nothing for him. Does that seem silly? It's true. We have plenty of proof in nature. Mix paints. Put pigments together in a different way and you get a new color. Luther Burbank combined a potato and tomato and got a pomato. Combinations. There is no other accounting for Shakespeare or Browning or any of these people. They never had time to learn what all these people would do. But it is exactly like planting this kind of a seed. This is what will respond. So I say now, everything that this kind of a character will do, he will do in this characterization. He is now it. Well, it'll work that way. Now let's take another idea. Suppose somebody comes to you and he says, I am working on something, but I do not know what to do. And you don't know what to do, and he doesn't know what to do, but let's say God does know what to do. The creative intelligence knows. And therefore, when you say, this person now knows what to do, he is now compelled to think intelligently, to act intelligently. He is now compelled and impelled to make the right choice and compelled to act upon it. His intelligence will be directed. And as a result of that, the idea for action will come and he will follow it out. The work's right, it will be right. Therefore, there isn't the slightest thing that would be outside the possibility of your work in this kind of treatment. Somebody might say, well, after all, I only want to use it for big things. I don't believe that. There is no big and no little. I may sound very silly, but I know of several people who have told me that when they start to drive downtown, they always say they're going to find a parking space, and that they do. Isn't that important at that time? One of the great and interesting human things about Jesus to me was he met the need where the need was. They wanted wine. He turned the water into wine. They wanted money. They found it in a fish's mouth. The blind man wanted to see. He restored his sight. They needed to be fed. He multiplied the loaves and fishes. Always Jesus was living, it seems to me, as though this present moment is infinity compressed into this act, right here. If I want something that harms no one today, is that not just as important? If the whole world exists, somebody said to me yesterday morning after breakfast at the Ellen Cantor Inn in Santa Barbara, where we always stay when we're up there, because friends of ours own its most charming place on the coast. I'm not paid to make this announcement, but it is, and about the best food. Now, somebody who was permanent guest there, she said, I said, you've been here. I see you year after year. I live here. She says, I'll die here. Well, I said, maybe you'll continue to live here. Well, she said, I don't care about that, because I don't think life has any meaning anyway. And I think probably the sooner it's over, the better it'll be. Well, I said, sister, I hardly know her. I said, won't you be surprised if you drop dead tonight and then wake up in a few minutes somewhere else? And you, I said, that's going to be a happy surprise. Well, she said, of course, I hope it is that way. But she said, tell me. She knows what I do. She said, do you know what God is? I said, no. Well, she says, I'm sorry, I thought you could tell me. Well, I said, do you know what life is? You're alive. You have to accept these things. Here we are. Well, she said, what is it all for then? What's the meaning? I said, if I were to tell you, I would merely tell you this. It's only my opinion. I don't believe we're here to save people's souls or to save our own. This is a terrible confession. For heaven's sake, don't breathe it outside these sacred or profane walls, whichever they may be. I said, I don't think we're here to learn lessons so that we'll get good, because I don't know what good is or bad. Who am I to say? I said, I have a sneaking feeling we are here because God must express himself. We are that expression. We must be that delight. We must be that action, that feeling. And that, I think, is why we have these vague feelings, these strange, sometimes awesome, sometimes dynamic, subtle, mysterious. We cannot tell. Jesus said, the wind bloweth where it listeth. No man knoweth from whence it cometh or whither it goeth. So it is. It is that much and more. Now, if that's true, wouldn't it be funny if we are so completely stifling its expression that we are just animated enough to move about, when we might be more fully expressing life? I am a great believer that in our everyday work we should treat for the much and the more. Let us treat to know that not only everything that is good and needed will come, but things we cannot even know about, things we have not thought about or dreamt about. Is anything really too good to be true? This, I think, is the secret we have with God. And what a wonderful secret, that any one of us in the silence of his own soul, uncaught, unbound by any precedent, no matter what age, what time, the eternal is forever young. The infinite is forever beautiful. The universal energy is always dynamic. What would happen if we could so live that every day is a fresh beginning, every moment is a miracle, every act is a jubilant expression, every thought a proclamation of happiness and wholeness? What would happen? I so often wonder. I so yearn that it shall happen, to me at least, that looking deep into your eyes, at last least I shall say spontaneously, because it will spring up from some reality now reflecting what I see. At last, I too behold in thee the image of him who died on the tree.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.